Jerry Bader Show, 9:36. There's something I always like to say, that we have to be careful not to use the tactics of the left. And sometimes conservatives are tempted to do that. I think there are exceptions. This silencing by intimidation, we may have to start doing that. The way they are trying to shut down debate by marginalizing conservatism in general as being kooky. When in fact, the far left is pretty much kookier than anyone on the right. The Tea Party isn't kooky. The Tea Party, like all movements, has kooks. Well, every movement does. The question is per capita. Per capita, the left has more kooks than the right. One of the more prominent kooks, liberal kooks in Wisconsin, is one Jeremy Ryan. And it's because God has a sense of humor that his last name is Ryan, which I will get to in a moment. Jeremy Ryan is better known around the state as Segway Boy, the protester in Madison who was on the Segway, the same guy that went into the press room in the Capitol building and mocked a woman over her dead father. Yeah, that guy. Jeremy Ryan may not have three active brain cells, but he was clever enough, because liberals spend all day coming up with these kinds of things, to make mischief. A lot of people don't realize this. To run for Congress in Wisconsin, you do not have to live in the congressional district. This came up with Reid Ribble in 2010. If you win, I'm sure you have to move into the district. But you do not have to live in the district to run. This has come up with Glenn Grothman as well. Grothman currently does not live in the 6th Congressional District, nor does he have to run. Jeremy Ryan doesn't live in Congressman Paul Ryan's congressional district, but he's on the primary ballot running as a Republican. Okay, how did he get enough signatures to run as a Republican? He lied. He told people they were signing a petition to legalize marijuana. Remarkably, actually not so remarkably, the Government Accountability Board approved his candidacy. No, you didn't prove that he misled people. There's evidence all over the place. Now, conservative talk radio hosts in Milwaukee are in a mild panic over this because they're afraid that he's going to succeed in confusing some number of voters who see Ryan on the primary ballot and vote for the wrong Ryan. I give voters everywhere a hell of a lot more credit than that, and I'm not terribly worried about that. My guess is Republicans who've been voting for Paul Ryan know Paul Ryan's name when they see it. I'm virtually unconcerned that voters in Southeast Wisconsin are going to screw that up. I'm really not very worried about that. Here's the bigger issue. How the hell could the Government Accountability Board not boot him off the ballot? And admittedly, they did rule in the favor of some Republicans when they went through the nominating papers, but how could they not? Well, the good news is media trackers reported yesterday that the Racine County District Attorney's Office is investigating the evidence that suggests that he misled people into signing his nominating papers. And he may face action on that level. But this is another example of the incredibly biased Government Accountability Board. There is no way in hell, none, that this should have stood. There's social media evidence. There's other evidence that he was telling people, yeah, you're signing a petition to legalize marijuana. So, of course, he got all sorts of liberals to sign Republican nominating papers. This is only clever if you've got a stacked deck like the Government Accountability Board to go along with it. Which apparently he did. Again, I'm not all that worried. Paul Ryan will be just fine. But that the Government Accountability Board allowed this, that's the real travesty here. Speaking of travesties, I guess we could do this as a what is right and what is wrong topic, but there's no way that I can withhold from you how I feel about this from the onset. This is a story that takes place concerning a UW Whitewater freshman. I cannot believe what law enforcement did here has been allowed to stand. And I think this is an interesting topic statewide because this could happen to anyone, anywhere. One of the most important fundamentals of conservatism is individual property owner rights. Your property cannot be searched without due cause. Your property cannot be seized without due cause. It has been determined in Wisconsin, legislatively, a law was created that if you use an automobile in the commission of a drug crime, the automobile can be seized. For years, the Sheboygan County Sheriff's Department has had in parades, I think it's a 67 Camaro, confiscated by a drug from a drug dealer. They painted it up, Jason, Sheboygan County Sheriff's, taken from a drug dealer. Sweet ride, by the way. They're very proud of it. Okay, that was a huge drug bust. It got a lot of reporting in Sheboygan County. Listen to this one. Police say a University of Wisconsin Whitewater freshman sold drugs to an informant 3 times last year, but instead of charging her with a crime, they kept the car she had on campus, even though her father, who paid for and owns it, argued he was an innocent owner under state forfeiture laws. She's never been charged, but they still took the car. And it's not even her car. Now, the State Court of Appeals has agreed with a Woolworth County judge that the father is out of luck. All she had was bare physical control of the car, said Joseph Owens, a New Berlin lawyer representing the student and her father. It's illogical. The motor vehicle code says the owner is the person on the title. Here's what the appeals opinion says. 20-year-old Melanie Bickley of Illinois sold drugs to a confidential informant 3 times last spring. Police say Bickley drove a 2010 Nissan Altima to a location for the transaction each time, and the sales took place in the car. On May 9th, police seized the car and found evidence inside of drug sales and other things suggesting Bickley used the car often. Prosecutors filed a civil forfeiture action against the Altima on May 23rd, 2013, but never charged Bickley with a crime. Neither prosecutors nor UW Whitewater immediately returned messages about the case. She and her father fought the forfeiture on the ground that he was the innocent owner of the vehicle. He testified he bought it new for about $26,000. It was registered and insured in his name, and he paid oil changes, upkeep, that sort of thing. But a Woolworth County judge found, now listen to this, that for purposes of the forfeiture, Melanie was the actual owner because she had possession and control of the vehicle, which she used while a student at UW Whitewater. The judge found that while her father would be out the money, Melanie would suffer the greatest consequence of the car's forfeiture because she no longer would have transportation. Is that insane? And then the appeals court upholds this? Further, with the forfeiture, Melanie will no longer have the Altima to provide her the means for continuing to sell illegal drugs, which is the purpose of the forfeiture statute, the appeals court found in affirming the Woolworth County order. Owens says he hopes John Bickley, a former lawyer and former prosecutor, will ask the state Supreme Court to hear the case. Otherwise, Owens said, no parent is safe from losing a vehicle over something their child might do while driving it. There's nothing else a parent could do to establish ownership beyond what John Bickley did, Owens said, other than not let your kid use the car. At the civil trial over forfeiture, John Bickley testified that his daughter used the car to come home nearly every weekend, when other family members sometimes used the car as well. He had his own set of keys, though he admitted he had not driven the car since February. So the car remains an impound. I think there are two things here. One, it's his car. So what the appeals court said is, as an owner of a vehicle, if you let someone else use that vehicle and they commit a drug crime, your car can be taken even if you didn't know they were using it for drugs. Two, and I think this is the bigger issue, she was never charged with a crime. How can you forfeit the vehicle for drug use in the vehicle when she was never charged with that crime? I believe this is theft. I believe this man's car has been stolen by authorities. It is boggling to me that a judge upheld this forfeiture. It is beyond boggling that an appeals court upheld this forfeiture. She was actually the owner because she had possession of it. Now, I am pretty hopeful that my daughters would never deal drugs. I'm pretty certain that wouldn't happen. But they're taking a car registered to me to Eau Claire this fall. So you're telling me I give up property owner rights of that car when I let my daughters take it to college? I cannot believe two courts have upheld this. I'm stunned. 406-1360, 888-455-1360, to Jeff in Green Bay. Jeff, hi, you're on the Jerry Bader Show.
Thanks for taking my call. The automotive companies, manufacturers, and leasing companies should be furious over this ruling. If someone leases a car and they do a drug transaction under this ruling, that car could be seized and no longer then it's taken from the leasing company or the manufacturer.
What about a rental car?
The owner.
What about a rental car?
Company.
Jeff, what about a rental car?
Yeah, same thing. Same thing. Rental, the big rental fleets, and I was thinking going bigger, the big leasing companies through GM and Ford and whatnot. But yeah, a rental car. You rent a car for a month because you're in town, you're traveling on business or whatever it might be, and you use it for illicit activities. Now a rental company is out of car.
I can, you know what, and I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not defending it. Thanks a lot for the call. I could see the cops trying it. I can't see two courts now upholding this. I'm beyond stunned. John on the road. John, hi, you're on the Jerry Bader Show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Jerry, this actually goes one step farther than what you had mentioned earlier about that she was never charged with a crime. I'm presuming that the forfeiture statute is based upon the commission of a crime. Even though I haven't specifically read it, I can't see it not being based upon anything other than that. But in our system of criminal justice, until testimony is made before a judge or a jury that something actually happened, it has not happened. And if it hasn't happened, you can't be held accountable for it in our system. It's as simple as that. And I find it preposterous that these two courts would uphold that seizure. And I think maybe there's something else that we don't know about this that might be going on.
Well, it's a good point, John. Thanks for the call, because here's the first thing. If the statute allows for the forfeiture of the vehicle before a conviction, it shouldn't. It absolutely should not. Let's get Mary in. Mary on the road, go ahead.
Okay, this totally scares me, Jerry. We're talking about a car. What happens if your daughter, my daughter, takes and sells drugs out of our home?
Well, there is no statute at this point where they can confiscate your home. There is a statute where they can confiscate your vehicle. But you're right about the slippery slope there. Thanks a lot for the call. I've never been a big fan of this statute anyway. I could see in some circumstances with, you know, where the person is a professional drug dealer, whatever. This is such an incredible violation. 406-1360, 888-455-1360. It's 951.
All things Jerry Bader. JerryBaderShow.com.